Hi, my name is Amanda Russell. I'm the communications consultant for Western United Dairies, and this is Seen and Heard. Dr. Payne is with us this week, giving us the latest news on the avian influenza outbreak.
Next up, we have Tiffany Labandola of EverAg with a market update.
Let's jump into it.
Hi, folks. Hope you had a great week. Last week's strong trade data gave the CME cheese markets a bump. We got into the mid-150s. But this week, demand isn't appearing very robust, and blocks, in particular, just couldn't hold at those levels. After reaching as high as 157, they settled back down to 153.50 per pound. That was still up 2 cents on the week. A whopping 44 loads of blocks changed hands at the exchange this week, with 21 of those loads on Friday alone. That was the largest single-day volume we've seen since May of 2019. Barrels, meanwhile, ended the week at $1.57 and a quarter, more than 4 cents higher. 20 loads traded there. We just haven't eaten as much cheese this year, according to data. For the first time since 2013, year-to-date domestic usage for the first 2 months of the year fell below prior year levels by about 1%. Retail doesn't seem to be the issue, as scanner data has been showing volume up still about 2% there. But food service has not been strong. Survey data shows pretty negative restaurant as well as quick serve restaurant traffic for the last 13 weeks on average. It just seems like consumers strapped with those heavy loads of credit card debt may be foregoing eating out or pizza night with a family in lieu of more modest meal options. Contacts are also citing pretty soft performance from industrial customers. So we really need demand just to pick up back up in the cheese market. Over at butter, people still seem to be looking for product. We saw the CME market hit a new year-to-date high of 297. We moderated a bit after that, but still closed the week at a good level, 292 per pound. That was down 2 cents for the week. We did see 14 loads trade there over the course of the week. In the non-fat market, that low stock, weak demand tug of war continues, but prices are staying pretty stable. Spot non-fat settled at $1.14 and a quarter. That was a penny higher for the week, with nine lots trading hands. Looking forward to next week, it is another relatively quiet week on the dairy report front. We do get a full global dairy trade event on Tuesday morning. So folks will be watching to see if we can see some continued strength there as we did a couple weeks back. Please reach out with any questions.
Did you know that you can turn your dairy manure into cash? Bennett Environmental is offering above-ground dairy digesters at no cost to you. These systems can also remove nitrates from your lagoons to help you comply with water board regulations. Our proven above-ground technology will generate income for your dairy into the foreseeable future. Because we truck the renewable natural gas off-site, your dairy can profit regardless of your location. Bennett Environmental, turning your wastewater liabilities into sustainable assets. Learn more at bennett-environmental.com.
Dr. Payne, welcome to Seen and Heard. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us this week.
Well, thank you. I'm always glad to go ahead and talk with our partners at Western United.
So we wanted to touch base on the avian influenza outbreak. It's been at the top of the news cycle, and we want to know, what new information do you have, or do we have this week?
Well, just from this week alone, new information is coming in. Laboratory confirmed diagnosis have occurred inside one herd each from North Carolina, South Dakota, and Ohio. At least in the North Carolina case, we're receiving field reports that suggested that it was cattle that had been shipped in from out of state. Importantly, both the cattle that had been shipped from out of state and the herd and the cattle that were tested that were resident cattle in the North Carolina herd that were found to be infected were all asymptomatic. So in at least the reports that we're getting from Cooperative Extension in North Carolina is that neither the herd, the additions that were coming into the herd, nor the herd itself ever exhibited symptoms.
Okay. So that kind of pivots us into the order that was established last week. So on April 4th, CDFA and the state veterinarian established an order for entry requirements for importing dairy cattle into California. Can you break that down for us? What does that mean?
Sure. So in consultation with both dairy and beef industry representatives, this week, CDFA began the process of implementing two pretty important enhancements for CVIs, the Certificates of Veterinary Inspection. These are the health papers that accompany all dairy breed cattle originating from states that are known to have been herds or have herds that are suspected to have been infected with HPAI. So the first of those enhancements is a shortening of the period during which the health paper is valid from a previous 30 days to the current 7 days. This decreases the risk that animals incubating high path avian influenza would be missed during a veterinary inspection. The second enhancement, which is a little bit more unusual, is that the certificate for veterinary inspection includes the following statements: that all animals identified on this CVI have been inspected and do not originate from premises with a confirmed detection of bovine-associated influenza A syndrome or that are currently under investigation as suspect premises. So there's some legalese there and regulatory ease there, but what it highlights is that this new requirement highlights the responsibility that out-of-state veterinarians have to investigate the origin and the history of the livestock which he or she are issuing documents for. Now, what CDFA tells us is that haulers will not be turned around and shipments, but that shipments without appropriate paperwork will face additional regulatory scrutiny and may actually be quarantined by CDFA for up to 21 days.
Okay. So as of the 10th, that I read a report that there are no cases that have been confirmed in California herds, correct?
There have been no herds that have been reported as having been diagnosed positive or having had symptoms, either from the California Department of Food and Agriculture or USDA.
Okay. But naturally, you know, the worries persist. So what do producers need to be aware of? Or what are there any practices that you recommend that they start implementing immediately? Or is it too soon to keep an eye out for symptoms? Or what? What do you recommend that producers do?
So it's totally appropriate that, you know, given what they're seeing happening in other states, it's totally appropriate that producers in California would be concerned about it and would want to know what actions might be reasonable. Importantly, there appear to have been a couple of different transfers. The first was the original transfer or transfers that occurred from the wild bird population into Midwestern cattle. And we don't know exactly how that occurred. We believe that it occurred from wild birds because the virus which has infected the cattle inside the Midwest herds is exactly the same virus. It's the same strain, same clade, it's the same lineage as they are finding inside wild birds that are circulating inside the Midwest and the commercial herds that were infected from the wild birds. And in fact, the same strain that caused one dairy employee to be develop some conjunctivitis, some eye infection that he recovered from. Because it's all the same virus, USDA, pretty much everybody, believes that the original introduction of high path avian influenza into the dairy herd in the Midwest occurred from bird to cattle. What we don't know is exactly how that happened. There are just a whole variety of different methodologies that could have occurred by. It could have been wild birds that were defecating inside stored feed or crops. It could have been it could have been direct exposure, physical exposure of wild birds to dairy, although that seems less likely. It could have occurred as a result of birds that had avian influenza dying and then were incorporated into either the TMR or into silage as corn was being harvested. It could have occurred as a result of birds either defecating in or their carcasses being immersed inside watering troughs. None of those things are, none of those methods of exposure are necessarily mutually exclusive. So there might have been more than one avenue by which cattle could have been exposed to that particular virus. Subsequently, especially inside North Carolina, Michigan, Idaho, there's epidemiologic evidence that cattle, sometimes asymptomatic cattle, may have carried the virus and then infected other herds. And we don't know, once again, we don't know how that transfer would have occurred. Does it require nose-to-nose contact and saliva being exchanged by cows? Could it have been from respiratory droplets in terms of coughing? Could it simply have been physical transfer of the virus through water troughs or through manure? Because the virus seems to be isolated in high numbers in infected symptomatic herds in the milk, there's also the possibility that the virus is also being transferred during the milking process, much the same way as sometimes maybe staph or strep would be transferred from one cow to another.
Okay. So what other information is important for producers to have now? Is there anything else that they need to take into account as we move forward?
The most important advice that I would have for California dairy producers, because the disease and the disease syndrome has not been diagnosed inside California, is that especially in terms of preventing cow-to-cow transfer, the most effective preventions that California dairy producers can implement are actually, they can be done unilaterally. They can be done by themselves without having to worry about whether or not states or federal agencies are implementing appropriate restrictions. And CDFA is working really, really hard on trying to go ahead and manage that. In terms of cases, in terms of what producers can do to protect their herds in California, certainly confirming the history and the health status of the animals. So knowing if you're importing, for instance, replacement heifers from another state or elsewhere from California, it's super important to know, in addition to the new requirements that are being new requirements that are being implemented at the state borders, it's super important that California producers inquire about the movement and the housing and the history of the animals that are being transported in. So, and then in addition to that, because avian influenza is known, at least in birds, is known to be transported in secretions, manure, respiratory transmissions, and we know that it can be transported on transport vehicles from flock to flock. Having the transport vehicles that are bringing, replacement heifers back to California from the Midwest, it's super important that if not only do we know that those cattle aren't infected, but those cattle are being transported inside vehicles that have been cleaned and disinfected. So after arrival in California, the most important backstop precaution that a producer can take is like super rigid adherence to isolation, an isolation period for the new arrivals. And so regardless of what state new herd additions are originating from, incoming and returning animals should always be quarantined away from the rest of the herd for at least a minimum of 21 days. And to monitor the health status of those animals daily. And as important as doing that isolation is making sure that the location of the isolation is effective. And in order to be effective, you need to have an isolation area that doesn't allow nose-to-nose contact with other cows. They don't share a water source. Their manure isn't handled by the same manure that comes into contact with resident cows, either directly or by use of shared equipment. So it's super important that they use effective isolation procedures.
Great. Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with? today, Dr. Payne?
A couple of things. So in order to go ahead and protect your own neighbors, but also in order to go ahead and take early action if the disease is detected inside your herd. There's anecdotal information from dairy producers inside the Midwest that aggressive intra-herd biosecurity, so preventing the herd, preventing the infection from occurring from cow to cow within the herd, has been affected in limiting both the severity and the scope of infections within a herd. So so we want to both protect as many of the cattle as we possibly can within our own herd, but we also want to protect our neighbors as well. And so reporting unusual symptoms to your veterinarian and or to the state veterinary medical officer is super important. The other thing is, this disease was almost certainly at some point introduced into the Midwest from wild birds. And so now is probably a pretty good time to start discussing wild bird control with your veterinarian or with cooperative extension biologists about, are we doing everything we can to prevent exposure of wild birds, their carcasses, and their excretions to our cattle here in California? It's important to remember that avian influenza, this particular strain of avian influenza that we're seeing inside the Midwest, has also been isolated from wild birds and wild bird carcasses in California. That happens fairly frequently. So at least the disease, that virus is circulating, you know, within the wild bird population in California. And, you know, everything that we can do, although it may not be a silver bullet, to prevent high levels of viral transfer is a chance to go ahead and prevent or mitigate the disease as it might appear inside California.
Great. Well, I know it's been a busy week. I know it's a lot is going on. So we really appreciate your time coming on today.
Western United's been a strong CDQAP supporter for decades and always happy to do it. You have a great and restful weekend.
If you have any questions about the avian influenza outbreak, we have tons of resources on our website at wudairies.com. And we also have a few resources that Dr. Payne has shared with us, and we'll have them linked in the show notes below and also on our website.
Pacific Gas and Electric is here to remind you that signs keep you safe. Sections of our natural gas transmission pipeline travel underground and beneath agricultural land. For the safety of you, your family, and your employees, pipeline markers are placed to indicate the approximate location of the pipe as a reminder to use extra care. Removing a pipeline marker creates a serious safety hazard. To have additional markers placed or report damaged or missing markers, please call your PG&E account manager or our Agricultural Customer Service Center at 877-311-3276. To learn more, visit www.pge.com/agsafety. Remember, signs keep you safe.
Yosemite Farm Credit is the farmer's choice for agriculture financing. As a farmer-owned cooperative, we are dedicated to serving our neighbors in the agriculture community with financial products and services tailored to your operation and backed with the relationship you can trust. Whether you're purchasing real estate, making improvements to the dairy, or wanting to purchase or lease equipment, we're here to help our members prosper. Visit our website at yosemitefarmcredit.com to find a branch location nearest you.
Thank you to the Western United Dairy's generous business sponsors, the Morningstar Company, Holt of California, Farm Credit Alliance, PG&E, Arada, Swingle, Van Egmond and Goodwin Law Offices, Yosemite Farm Credit, F&R Ag Services, Moss Energy Works, California Dairy Magazine, Bennett Environmental, and Common Good Water. We appreciate our sponsors and thank them for their continued support. While Western United Dairies respects the varied views of our guests, please note that the opinions expressed in the Seen and Heard podcast may not necessarily reflect the positions of the Western United Dairies Board of Directors or our sponsors. If you would like more information on how to sponsor Western United Dairies or this podcast, please send us an email at info@wudairies.com.